I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hey, everybody, welcome to The Memo. It is Wednesday, October 12th. Is that correct, Brad?
That is correct. That is correct, sir.
Yes. now we're doing impressions. That's how bad the show has dropped in the ratings. Season one was really good, but it's been going downhill in season two.
We resorted to Ed McMahon. We're doing impressions.
Or Marv Albert. Either way.
Yes.
Either way works. Derek Russell joined by Brad Locke, Chris Kiefer on this Wednesday, as I mentioned, after an abbreviated series of episodes last week.
And then you weren't here Monday.
And I wasn't here Monday, so it's been a while. It's been a week.
It has been for you.
Since I've done The Memo.
Slacker. Took a couple vacation days.
I'm sorry. Do you want to get into vacation day talk?
What?
Wait, I haven't taken one since January.
I'm taking off this weekend.
Yeah, I know.
Get a wedding to be in.
Say, I'm sorry. I took one day
off. What'd you do in your vacation time?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It was glorious.
Good call.
I was going to lose them if I didn't take them.
Yeah, it's one of those things you don't roll over.
You gotta burn those.
Yeah, my work anniversary is Friday, and so I'll actually have vacation days.
Happy
to take
work anniversary, Brad.
Thanks, Derek.
You're celebrating it by taking off, I see.
Yes, going to a friend's wedding to be in.
You mentioned that.
14 years here,
Brad,
Derek.
You don't have any friends.
You were in high school when I started here.
Huh?
14 years? You were 17? You're 31 now, right?
Carry the two, yeah?
Fall of 02. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was my senior year, so it was...
Wow.
Yeah.
You were a senior at Tupelo High?
Yeah. And look how much better I've done here than you have.
Wow.
In my short period of time. It's sad, really.
Man.
No, it's fine. Mm. You do good work. You do okay.
Yeah. They ain't fired me yet. That's all that matters.
There's a lot of legal red tape.
Not worth it.
They're looking for a way, trust me.
My buyout is way too high. That's it.
I'm pretty sure that's not it, if I had to venture a guess.
The face and voice of the Daily Journal.
Or something.
Yeah. I was blind and deaf.
We're in trouble if that's the case, Chris.
I was told I'd only have to read to have a newspaper subscription.
I've been here so long, we didn't even know what a webcast was. Back then.
Yeah,
I don't know if they existed.
You didn't know what hair was back then.
I barely knew what the internet was.
Well, that too. The internet had been around for 10 years at that point.
But our website was, like, not good.
There was no social media.
There was not.
Story time with Uncle Brad.
Yeah.
Back when I started here.
We used to walk up the stairs to the building, see, in the snow.
We didn't have webcasts.
Didn't have no computers at our desk. We wrote the paper, and we liked it.
We'd go home in our horse and buggy.
That's what we called my Mazda, horse and buggy.
We didn't have computers. We had these typewriters.
I got Facebook in 04 when it first came to Mississippi State. That was before you had to have, that was one of those you had to have a .edu.
Yeah, you had to be a college student, basically.
You couldn't have it. And then they started rolling out to high school, and I was like, oh, God.
And then everybody
terrible.
Got on.
And then everybody. And then your parents were on. I was like, no. Sorry, Mom.
I like Facebook. It's fine.
I don't like Facebook.
I do. Because I'm, like, antisocial, so this is how I can keep up with people.
You're antisocial, but you love social media.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's...
Because there's that buffer between me and other humans through social media.
Yeah.
I don't actually have to interact with them directly face-to-face.
That's basically like hating gatherings, but loving funerals.
Well, I don't like funerals, no. I don't like weddings that much either, but...
All right, but you're going to be in one this weekend.
Yeah, I am. It's my buddy.
Fourth time he's mentioned that in the show. You don't have friends, Brad. It's okay.
I do. I have two really good friends from high school. That's about it.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well, yeah.
Hey,
tell us more things about how old you are and how much time you spent here.
Oh, gee, I don't know. I mean,
it was black and white in here back in my day. We didn't have color. Didn't print the newspaper in color.
I don't know what voice I'm doing.
When I started in this business, though, it was at the previous paper I was at. They actually did we had layout people that would literally cut and paste.
Yeah,
the
had
stuff.
The X-Acto knives.
Yeah,
and
onto
that.
The
stuff. We did that in high school.
I can't remember what that process is called now. It's been so long. Didn't do that when I got here.
Yeah.
A little bigger paper here than that.
We had those. I think they came from here, actually, those old light-up desks.
Yeah, yeah.
That would make it transparent. I think they were donated from the journal.
Probably so.
And, in high school?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And middle school. And high school, both. I wrote for the paper in middle school and high school.
You wrote that? I never wrote for the paper until college.
Really, really hard-hitting stuff. Like, is the milk really 2% in the cafeteria? I mean, I was... Wow. I was uncovering some...
Was it?
You'll have to go back and find the archives.
You can find some good, some student papers these days. I mean, uh-huh. There's some good ones. Like the Oxford High School paper, they had the whole story about the proposal to basically have a
segregation of schools.
Yeah, pretty much what it boiled down to was segregation of schools.
That's some dangerous stuff.
And that was good reporting on by those students. They got a good, I want to say Larissa Rucker runs that program.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, she's a journalist.
I just reviewed Dave Matthews' albums and said whether or not the milk was bad.
I mean, you know. So what'd you have to say about Dave Matthews?
Huh?
What'd you have to say about
Dave Matthews? Well, it was like when Between Two Streets, I don't know. It was just, it was a weird time for me.
I'm always kind of two minds about Dave Matthews. Like, I like some of his songs, but I can't take them in large doses.
Sure.
And some people really, it's like some people either really love him or really don't like him at all.
Uh-huh.
What do you fall in that?
I feel like that's how most people feel about you.
Well, that's a fair point.
All right.
Derek.
All right. It is Wednesday.
Can't say I disagree.
All right. Love you too, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Wednesday. So
I'd go to your wedding.
You would? Well, yeah. You missed it. It was 18 years
She'll
ago.
She'll leave you at some point, and I'll go to your next one.
Wow. She hadn't left me by now, buddy.
Don't give her any ideas if she's listening.
She's stuck with me. She ain't leaving me because we got five kids.
That's the perfect time to leave you. You've got to pay all the money.
Yeah, she'd probably try to make me take the kids.
Half and half.
Yeah. you know, that works.
It'd be like the Bible. We'll cut this one in half.
Sorry, Trinity, you're the middle child. Good luck.
To prove if you both want the child, we will cut her in half. Got biblical up in here today. Man. I didn't mean for that. It's a Wednesday, too.
Mm, goodness.
All right. Got a full show today.
We do. We got Dennis Sid on the show to talk about this drought
that
has plagued us in recent weeks.
Yeah. We've got no rain.
No.
Speaking of biblical.
No, yeah. No rain.
That's, yeah. That's locusts, though. How about that?
What about them? We have locusts?
I don't know.
Plagues.
Oh, yeah. Oh, plagues. Frogs and... Seen any frogs?
The Bible's a book that was written.
Oh, I know.
Sorry.
I was trying to promote the show.
Tom Clancy novel, maybe you've heard of it.
Oh, man.
Drought, yeah. We've had zero rain.
Yeah.
Didn't get any rain from the effects of Hurricane Matthew.
No, we didn't. Got some wind, that's about it.
Hey, speaking of which, what's the latest from your old hometown?
I mentioned the paper I worked at out of college, and that was in Lumberton, North Carolina. If you've been watching the news lately, Hurricane Matthew, I mean, the effects are still being felt because the river up there, I think it's called the Lumber River, has overflowed. And that's where, and again, I lived in Lumberton for 2 years. That's in Robinson County. And, I mean, it's bad. They've been having to rescue people off of rooftops. They've had some violence over there because that county has the highest crime rate in the state of North Carolina, okay? And this is a rural county. Lumberton's the biggest.
Word.
I know, but Lumberton's
rural.
Lumberton's the biggest town. It's only about 20,000 people, but the crime right there, and it was like that when I was there. It was like big city crime. There's a lot of poverty and a lot of tobacco fields. But, yeah, it's really bad. And the newspaper I worked at, the guy who hired me, the editor, is still there, Donnie Douglas, and he has been working out of a hotel in Charlotte because their building got flooded, and they couldn't print a paper for several days. I think they were supposed to have printed one for yesterday, and they couldn't. They had to outsource their printing jobs. So I don't know if they actually got a hard copies published now. Again, they've been trying to update their website and doing a pretty good job considering they've only got like four people able to do anything right now. So it's a tough deal up there in Lumberton and Robinson County. So, I mean, I think they've got some power back on now, but water, you know, is an issue and just... And they had a state trooper shot and kill somebody who was acting violent. I mean, it's a bad, bad deal up there. So I've just been thinking about them the last few days. So, yeah, I saw the pictures and CNN flew over Lumberton the other day, and it was just I-95 was shut down because it was flooded. That's how bad it was. And we lived not more than a couple hundred yards from that river. So I don't know how my old neighborhood is doing, but probably not too good. So on that depressing note...
It's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. Well, let's remind you that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, formerly known as Palmer's. The locally owned grocery store still offers high quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. So visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main. Okay, let's do show.
We didn't mention who else is going to be on today. We just talked about the drought. No, but Caleb Bedillion's going to be on.
Oh, yeah, I meant to say that. Then you distracted me with something. Caleb Bedillion will be on the show. Talk about his series.
I don't know how distracted you were talking about the drought.
I'm totally blaming you.
And somebody interviews Jenna Parson for food today. I don't know who.
Chris Kiefer, trying to make it all about him now.
Yes, he wants
it's about us, Chris.
He wants the limelight. It's about Brad, in case you hadn't figured this out.
Actually, yeah, it's about me.
He's
the
voice and the face and the nose of the Daily Journal.
The nose. It is a prominent nose,
yeah,
isn't
there you
it?
Go. He's the facial hair. All right, well, let's get this show started.
Oh, okay. Hey, we've got Caleb Bedillion back on the show. What's up, man?
Hey there, Brad. Glad to be here today.
How you doing?
I'm well.
Great. Glad to hear it. Hey, let's talk about this three-part series you did a lot of work on in regards to the possibility of a police advisory board. I guess that's the name people were using. You could call it something else.
Yeah, that looks like what we're going to have. I mean, there have been calls began over the summer in the wake of controversy over the June 18th shooting of Antoine Shumpert. So we heard calls for a police review board or a civilian review board. This would be a board of civilians, like it sounds, that would typically, the way these are set up in other cities, they have some kind of role at looking at complaints of police misconduct, misbehavior. They're set up in very different ways. Some one in Newark, New Jersey is very powerful and very recently formed, kind of the darling of kind of the people that call for this sort of thing.
Right.
Subpoena power, independent investigator that can basically just mount a completely independent investigation. Others are kind of just take a look at the police department's own internal affairs investigation to see if there were any problems with it. But we're not even going to have anything like that. No. At least it appears highly unlikely.
Yeah. No subpoena power. And some people think, well, that kind of takes the teeth out of any advisory board.
Right. What we're going to get, at least what's going to be recommended by a committee that looked into this, is an advisory board. So that recommendation is going to be presented before the city council. Frankly, based on the recommendation, it's not entirely clear what the role of the advisory board is going to be in terms of how it's going to operate. There's a lot in the recommendation about, making suggestions to the police department in terms of policy and procedures. It does appear, so right now, if you want to make a complaint against a police officer, you have to file a written and signed complaint with the department. It appears that you'll probably be able to file that complaint with the advisory board, but then all the advisory board will do is pass it on to the department. I mean, the council will have to work out these details when they actually approve an ordinance, if they do, but that looks like what we're going to get.
Yeah, and, speaking of the subpoena power, the second story you wrote talked about how that's kind of, from a legal standpoint, a little murky as to whether that's even possible. And also it might strip the city council of some of its duties and powers.
Yeah, Mayor Shelton and his administration seems to be taking the stance that the city itself does not have the authority to just create a brand new board that doesn't exist, in this case a citizen review board, and then just give it subpoena power.
Yeah.
The city council has at least the limited power to require city employees to appear before the council, which would include police officers. So if the council could create a board and kind of delegate its authority to compel the appearance of employees, then a review board could at minimum force police officers to appear before them. City Attorney Ben Logan said, he would probably have to seek a attorney general's opinion as to whether the city council can delegate its authority. But I don't think that's something the mayor's administration is even going to pursue. So that is probably the end of that.
Yeah, and you mentioned the process of filing a complaint. You had a story that dealt with that, the third story in the series. And, again, you have to have a formal written complaint, and by the time you go through all the steps, a lot of times there's never really an investigation into it.
Yeah, we'll see. There have been 20 formal complaints over the last 3 years. Now I say 3 years because 3 years is the amount of time the current police chief has been in power. So that's the data I looked at. 20 formal written complaints. of those five led to some kind of discipline for the officer involved or officers. This could range from, you know, verbal reprimand, formal counseling, like from the department saying, you know, this is what you need to be doing different, being sent home without pay, termination. I mean, that's kind of the range of discipline. But yeah, a lot of complaints are informal and never make it to the formal stage. Someone may say, for example, call in, I want to they get sent, maybe they have a complaint about an officer that pulled them over. So they'll probably get sent to that officer's patrol supervisor. And, you know, the person may complain and the patrol supervisor may say, you know, hey, well, this is the way we're trained to do this. And that may be the end of it. I mean, someone can keep, if they want to, they can say, well, I want to, eventually they could get to the chief eventually if they wanted to. And they'll if they're clearly unsatisfied with what the department is saying, the department will offer them the chance to file a formal statement. And obviously someone, if they know they can do that, can just begin there immediately. But most, I mean, again, over the last 3 years, there have been 20 formal complaints, but I mean, many more just informal complaints that were either resolved to the satisfaction of the person that complained, or they just didn't want to go through the trouble of taking it to the formal stage.
Right. And, you know, and you have the internal affairs division of the department that looks into these. I mean, there's just the people who want the advisory board, they feel like internal affairs can't be as objective as they'd like.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a couple different arguments for having a review board. The first is, you know, hey, look, our system is built on checks and balances. You know, we have a legislature, a executive, judicial. When it comes to the police department, how come they get to basically investigate themselves? So the argument would be, even if we don't think they're doing anything wrong right now, it just makes sense to have an outside agency that's kind of taking a look at them. It just kind of builds more transparency and trust into the process. And yeah, there are others locally, though, who don't trust the internal affairs process and don't think the department can adequately police itself, and that we need this review process to have fairness in the process.
Right. Okay. Well, this is a good series you did here, Caleb, and it ran Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday in the Journal. You can find all these stories at djournal.com. So I highly recommend y'all check it out. Caleb, thanks for your time, man.
Sure thing.
And be sure to look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan. New episodes air every Wednesday. You can watch the webcast live around 11 a.m. at djournal.com or watch the replay later on. And the podcast version drops in the afternoon. Listen to it for free in iTunes or podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. And for Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans, you want to check out Double Coverage. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode every Thursday afternoon, in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
And if you can't get enough of Brad Locke on the memo, you can wake up and make sure he's the first thing you see in the morning Daily Journal news break, a quick summary of, that's terrible, a news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a five-minute video. Shows of the Brad Locke Show are posted every Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. You can watch them for free anytime at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Android or Apple devices.
I think we just changed the name from Newsbreak to the Brad Locke Show. I'm fine with that.
I'm only okay with that if we do like an 80s, 90s TGIF sitcom style opening where totally it's like cool, you mugging for the camera and stuff.
We've got pictures already of
me doing that. Oh, we do have those from the memo we never used.
The memo pictures from last year we took.
I think that's good.
Striking poses, I mean, I am the face and voice of the journal, right? So it only makes sense. Call it the Brad Locke Show.
On that note, we're going to go to today's news memo. For more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Changes could be coming soon to the way Mississippi funds its schools. Legislative leaders announced that late Tuesday they had hired a New Jersey company to study ways to modernize the Mississippi Adequate Education Program. MAEP is the current formula used to determine how much state funding schools should receive. It has only been fully funded twice since it was enacted in 2003. House Speaker Philip Gunn and Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves announced on Tuesday that they had hired EdBuild to recommend changes to the formula. They pledged that Mississippi would not be spending any less money in the classroom. The contract with EdBuild will cost $250,000. Private funds have been raised to pay for at least half the work. Senator Hob Bryan of Amory was one of the original authors of the MAEP legislation in 97 and has been a consistent advocate for full funding. He is concerned that leaders have not revealed the private entities that are contributing funds to EdBuild. He also said he believes that the real goal of the effort is to cut funding for public education. Meanwhile, Reeves and Gunn said they want to see that money is going into the classroom. They said in recent years there has been more growth in administration costs than classroom instruction costs.
A U.S. Department of Justice representative will visit Tupelo to evaluate the ongoing efforts by city leaders to rebuild trust in the police department. Walter Atkinson with the Justice Department Community Relations Service will be in town today by invitation. City Chief Operations Officer Don Lewis said Atkinson is coming to listen to what Tupelo leaders are doing and to make recommendations. The Community Relations Service describes itself as a peacemaker in times of conflict over matters of race or other minority status. The service offers mediation, training, and consultation, all aimed at achieving mutual understanding. Tupelo Mayor Jason Shelton's administration recently formed six committees in an effort to enhance community outreach and engagement in the aftermath of the fatal shooting of a black man by a white Tupelo police officer. Atkinson will observe three of these committees in action. He will visit committees devoted to consideration of a police advisory board, increased community policing efforts, and changes to the city's hiring and training practices. The Justice Department is conducting a review of the June 18th shooting of Antoine Ronnie Shumpert by Officer Tyler Cook, but the Community Relations Service has no role in that review.
A water leak at the Verona Elementary School has prompted Lee County school officials to declare the situation an emergency. There's nothing wrong with the school's structure and no students are in danger, but the Lee County School District requested and was granted permission from the school board Tuesday to declare the case of structural deterioration at the school as an emergency. Doing so will expedite the process of getting the leak fixed, according to Lee County Superintendent Jimmy Weeks. Recently, water began leaking from the back walls of two campus buildings into the classrooms. The back walls are mainly comprised of windows and have galvanized metal material. Over the years, the seals on the window developed dry rot and deteriorated. Weeks said that if the situation was not declared an emergency, then the school district would have to hire an architect, get sets of specifications, and go through a bid process, which would likely delay work until January. This way, repairs can begin shortly and be completed within 4 or 5 weeks.
Four celebrity chefs have about a month to get prepared for their cooking show debuts. The annual Cooking Like the Stars event will be held on Sunday, November 13th at 6 p.m. at Park Heights Restaurant. The fundraiser for Boys and Girls Clubs of North Mississippi is patterned after the Food Network show Chopped. Volunteer chefs Chip Ashford, Shonda Cossett, Wesley Jones, and Gracie Menetry will be given a basket of mystery ingredients and a time limit to create a three-course meal for a panel of judges. Tickets are $100 and include a three-course dinner prepared by Park Heights using the same ingredients given to each celebrity chef. The audience also will be able to watch the action in the kitchen on large monitors in the dining room. For more information or to order tickets, call Lucia Randall at 662-841-6504.
And now let's listen to how white Derek is. Tupelo natives Ray Schrimmard have
announced...
Say that
five times fast.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You messed me up. Now I gotta do it over. Tupelo natives Ray Schrimmard have announced the second Shrimp Fest to take place December 22nd and 23rd in Tupelo. The event will feature a performance of the hip-hop duo as well as Diplo, Young Dolph, Big K.R.I.T., and more. Tickets will go on sale Tuesday, October 18th at 10 a.m. and will range from $25 to $55. For more information, call 662-841-6528 or visit shrimfest.com. That's S-R-E-M-M. Not to be confused with the Shrimp Fest going on at Red Lobster right now.
I thought it was Big Crit.
Is it Big Crit?
I don't know. Hey, isn't Diplo from Tupelo?
Diplo is from Tupelo.
Yeah, he's a...
Diplo from Tupelo.
Yeah, Diplo. He's more of a DJ kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he does he do that dubstep? I don't know.
I don't know.
We're so white.
I'm playing my Fleetwood Mac tunes in my head right now, so...
Let's welcome Dennis Sid into the show now. Dennis, how's it going, man?
Good morning. Didn't bring donuts. My apologies.
Payday, and Dennis didn't bring donuts.
Well, you know, donuts are good all day, so I may bring some later on. So.
You have spoiled us, Dennis. You know that.
I try. I do my best.
Dennis is the normally the guy that will bring donuts on a pretty regular basis. But anyway, I brought you in here not to talk about donuts, but to talk about this drought that's going on, which is...
Is there a drought?
Yes. They're calling it a, it's not a severe drought around here, although it sure seems like it. They're calling it a moderate drought, but you look at my yard, we moved over the summer, and the new house has a lot more vegetation and trees and bushes and everything than our last house. So I've got stuff dying all over the yard, Dennis. And that's a problem for not just homeowners, but farmers and people growing sod and gardeners and everybody.
Yeah, I cut my grass 2 weeks ago, and it was basically a giant dust storm. I got around about an acre.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've been sneezing, coughing, all that since, even with a mask and taking my allergy pill. But, yeah, it's really dry out there. Where I live, we had a story yesterday about the drought, and on the cover, on the main photo was Ronnie Downs and Downs' side farm. That's actually out where I live. But I've seen in the past couple of weeks they're out there having to irrigate or sprinkle. They have a giant sprinkler that they're using on his 85 acres of sod, and he's having to do it. Normally he's done at this time of year because it's cooler. There's enough moisture, but we haven't had any significant rainfall since August.
And may not have any for a while, although the latest forecast I saw yesterday said we have a decent chance of thunderstorms on Friday, I think it is. So maybe we'll get something in. But beyond that, it's looking like mid-November before we start getting
anything. And even with that, it won't be a drought buster. I mean,
it won't.
It may
settle the dust a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. A little bit. But yeah, farmers, well, if you're a cotton farmer, a cotton grower, you know, this is ideal weather. You don't want to you don't want it to be wet. But you know, if you're soybean, corn, well, corn's basically gone by now, but right. Soybeans, if you plant it early, you're okay. Right now I haven't seen very many good fields lately.
Right
And I talked to the agronomy agent, and peanuts are doing pretty good, but the problem is the ground is so hard that, you know, those tines that you're trying to break clay, basically.
Jeez.
And so it's tough on the equipment. You know, they have to stop and do what they need to do. And it's, you know, no relief. I mean, and for growers and for the sod farmers, you know, if they have to irrigate, that's fuel that they have to use.
And
labor.
And in the case of Ronnie Downs, he noted that, yeah, he's able to irrigate, but the creek he draws from is getting pretty low. I mean, the water shortage is going to be a problem before too long, perhaps.
Yeah, he can only sprinkle for so long, and then he may be up a creek, but pardon the pun.
That's right. And but like you said, some crops got planted early and harvested already, so a lot of those, like you said, corn are already
fine. If we remember, back in April, May, it rained a lot.
Yes, it did.
And farmers couldn't get into the ground. You know, right. They had to replant a few times, and then things were off and on, and then all of a sudden September comes and the spigot turns off.
Yeah. And we also got all these burn bans all over the state, really, and which you know, this time of year is starting to cool off. It's a nice time to go camping, but can't really have any campfires or bonfires or any other kind of fires at all.
I mean, and it's going back in the 80s later this week and over the weekend. So it's like, this is fall. This isn't fair.
Exactly. Yeah. It feels like fall in the mornings and at night, but during the day, sometimes it's not still feeling like summer. So, Dennis, I mean, what can you do except just kind of wait it out, I guess?
Pretty much. You know, we're at the mercy of Mother Nature. And if you want your yard to not crunch under your feet, then I guess you can sprinkle your yard, too. So.
I thought the government controlled the weather. I was told that Hurricane Matthew was a product of the...
We'll check with Donald Trump. Maybe he...
I thought Obama did the hurricane. That's what I was told.
Well, he
what Facebook says.
Yeah. We're probably delving into something we shouldn't delve into.
Conspiracies. NSA's going to come knocking on our door. How did you find out?
It's George Bush's fault. You're going to have black helicopters.
All right. Well, Dennis, appreciate you joining us, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'll bring donuts next time.
Yes. And be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capital View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capital Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session is over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. And we did have a show this week. We did fix our technical difficulty on Monday. Hey, today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, a locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program. The store now sells its groceries 10% over cost, and that's allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. Along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, and better parking. Visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices.
All right, well, as we do on most Wednesdays, we now go to food editor Jenna Parson. Jenna, we missed you last week at the Career Expo.
I missed y'all.
Well, we were too busy molding young minds, I guess, trying to find some future journalists and maybe more importantly, future subscribers.
Yes, always need subscribers.
Maybe the journalists, they can find something before they get trapped in this profession, before it's too late.
Run while you can. Both of my children at one point mentioned that journalism might be something they were interested in, and Charlie and I just said, if you've got any other interest in any other thing, go for it.
Try it.
So Mary's in occupational therapy school, and Patrick is leaning toward business, so I say bravo to them. And Jennifer is a teacher, so.
They're all on good paths.
Yes, away from journalism.
But it was good. It was a good event. But we missed talking about food, so now we get to come back to it.
Yes.
You know, first of all, I want to kind of talk about, you know, Cook of the Week has been going on for how long now?
Since 2002, 14 years.
And so I just think it's really neat for Celebration Village this year. I guess it kind of is a testament to the impact and the staying power of Cook of the Week and that feature that they are looking to showcase items from past Cooks of the Week for the Celebration Village this year.
Right. They called me and asked me if I could supply them with the names and phone numbers of the Cooks of the Week I had done. And I said, well, let's do the math. That's 52 a year in 14 years. And no, I cannot. I can't do that. But what we can do is write a story saying that anyone who's ever been featured as a Cook of the Week is asked to make his or her specialty, whether it's a cake or a pie or bread or a frozen casserole. And they, you know, often when I do Cooks of the Week and I see them later, I see them in the grocery store, I see them out for whatever reason, they will tell me that even years after they've been featured, that people will still say, I saw that story about you in the newspaper. So the Celebration Village bake sale ladies seem to think that the Cooks of the Week have some star power in Northeast Mississippi, and so they're reaching out to them. Now, they're also reaching out to anyone in the community, anyone in Northeast Mississippi who wants to make food and drop it by, because every donation is pure profit, and all the proceeds go right back to the Sanctuary Hospice House. So it's a great cause, and I don't know how much money they made last year at the bakery. I know it's in the thousands, and so the more stuff they get, the more successful they are, and the more successful we are as a community for having the Sanctuary Hospice House.
Sure, which I guess kind of speaks to just, you know, you hear from the people who have been touched by Sanctuary Hospice House, they're always kind of, you know, very strong in their praise for what it's done.
Right,
You know, having that sort of, I know some of the stories we've written in the past, it was a unique thing, to have a place for people to have home hospice outside of their home and it's kind of all come together.
So, and, you know, some people go there and they stay for weeks or sometimes months, and some people go and it's just maybe one night. And it almost makes me think that it's sort of a blessing that that person doesn't die at home, so that that family member doesn't, every time they walk in that bedroom or walk in that living room where the hospital bed was, think that's where, you know, she breathed her last or whatever. So I think it's a nice and peaceful. And if you've ever been there, it's just really peaceful. That's the best word to describe it.
I guess make you feel at home, even though you're not at home.
I mean, yes,
I hear they're very, for lack of a better word, indulgent of the people that are there.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
Treat them well. So what kind of items they're looking for? It looks like from your story, mostly baked goods, cakes, layer cakes, bundt cakes, spreads, muffins, cookies, brownies, candies.
Frozen casseroles and frozen soups. One of the women that I interviewed for the story, I think it was Linda Bullard, said pretty cakes, you know, those nice 3-4 layer cakes that are iced, and frozen casseroles, they just can't keep them. That's what people want, because they can take them home, they can put them in the freezer when their family comes at Thanksgiving, and they've got people in the house, not just for Thanksgiving meal, but for 4 days. Sure. They've got, you know, good food, ready-made, and they don't have to cook it.
Right.
Have to thaw it.
Exactly. Even a side dish for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it adds a lot. So people who want to donate, they can drop off food, I guess, a week from today, next Wednesday, from 10 to 4. And then you were saying there's also going to be a drive-through
on that Thursday morning. I think it's from 8 to 10.
To 10, yeah.
And you literally can just drive up in front of Building 5 at the Tupelo Furniture Market, roll down your window, pass a cake out, and they'll take it from you and take it inside to the bakery. So you don't even have to, you know, worry about parking and lugging it up there. You can just chuck it out the window to them.
And that's at Tupelo Furniture Market, Building 5.
Yes.
And then on the other side, for people who want to come buy all these baked goods from these celebrity cooks, those hours are also next Wednesday from 5:30 to 9. That's the preview party. And then the rest of it, Thursday and Friday, again, next week, Thursday and Friday, the 20th and 21st of October, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Right, and those are the hours of the Celebration Village, the holiday market itself.
Which is more than just the baked goods. That's where they'll have all kinds of
jewelry
items.
And clothing and home decor and candles and foods. And it's a hand-selected, not just anybody can set up a booth there. They screen, I guess, is what. So it's sort of it's a classy market. I don't know if you've ever been there, but
I haven't. My wife has, and so I've seen it on the credit card bills.
Oh yes,
and it'll usually show up as something else, you know, because it's all the different vendors and so on.
Right.
What is this? Oh, that's Celebration Village.
Yes.
She does a lot of Christmas shopping there. So
good.
I guess
good.
That's good. So you don't have to be a cook of the week, obviously, to donate, but if you are in a cook of the week and you donate and you want to be a cook of the week, you can just contact you. You're always looking for more cooks of the week, right?
Always looking for them.
Email you?
Email me, call me, fax me, send me a letter. I get nominations all sorts of ways.
There you go.
Stop me in the grocery store.
That's probably the best. That's probably where you get more nominations than anywhere else.
I do.
Yeah. So that email address is on Jenna.Parsons@journalink.com. That's Jenna.Parsons@journalink. That's ink with a C. It's always so hard to say. JourNalink.com.
Right. And if you're holding the paper in your hands, that email address is at the bottom of the Cook of the Week feature.
Right. Your column about baked stuffed eggs, it's interesting. I kind of had the same reaction as Charlie and Leslie when I read it, and you talked about having, how did you word it? Stuffed eggs and a mushroom cream sauce. And, you know, I'll try almost anything, but I just don't usually go to deviled eggs a lot. And then thinking about that sauce and,
well, if you don't like deviled eggs, you're not going to like this.
Well, but then when I read at the end, I'll let you tell your story, but when you describe it as bacon, eggs, mushrooms, cheese, I mean, it's got two of the essential ingredients. And if it's got bacon and cheese, I'll eat anything.
Yes. Well, Jane Riley, who oddly has never been featured as a cook of the week, but I did feature her as a Neighbors cover one time. But she stopped me in the grocery store about a year ago, and she said, "I've got the most wonderful recipe I want to share with you. I'll email it to you." And I forgot all about it, and then I saw her 2 or 3 months later, and she says, "Oh, I still have to email that recipe to you. I'll get right on that." Well, a year goes by, and I get this email from Jane a few weeks ago.
Just out of the blue. It just popped in her mind.
Well, no, I think what happened was she was making this dish for an at-home tailgate brunch. She's watching an Ole Miss on television.
Probably with Joe Rutherford.
Probably. And so she was going to make this along with a sausage and grits casserole and fresh fruit. And I think
that's a recipe I'll take too.
The sausage and grits
casserole. Sounds good.
I think because she was making this dish, she thought, oh, I need to send her that recipe. So she did. And when I saw it, and I saw that you devil eggs, but you do make a mushroom cream sauce with cream of mushroom soup and sour cream and sautéed butter and onions, and pour it over these eggs and then sprinkle with cheese and bake it, I had my reservations, but I am nothing if not adventuresome.
Sure.
So I made it, and it looked, it just, you know, looked like anything else did when it went in the refrigerator cold the night before. But the next morning when I baked it and it came out and it was all bubbly and gooey and everybody couldn't wait to try it, and I thought it was delicious. Charlie thought it was delicious. And Jennifer, stepdaughter Jennifer, and her husband Nick and Zoe, I pulled it out and I put it on the back of the stove and I said, y'all eat, I'm going to get ready for work. And I did, and came back in the kitchen and we saw them off. They were headed back toward California. Okay. And I went to put up the leftovers, and there, what was this huge pan of 16 of these eggs, there were three little eggs left. They had eaten all the rest of it, and there was a note from Jennifer saying, Mom, I need this recipe.
So I guess they were tolerable.
Yes, they were they were tolerable.
Right. And that recipe, for anybody who wants to see it, you can find it, of course, in today's Daily Journal or on the website at djournal.com. Tell us about your cook of the week, Kathy Higgins, and I guess she's most known for her red velvet cake.
Kathy and her husband, Bob, this was a second marriage for both of them, and they dated, I've forgotten what they told me, 6 or 7 years before they married, and they've been married 21 years, but it was about a year after they started dating. Bob worked at Cooper Tire. He was an engineer there, and she made a red velvet cake, and she took it to Cooper Tire and gave it to one of his coworkers and said, please deliver this. And so the coworker comes into Bob's office with this red velvet cake, and they were all like teasing him and whatnot. Well, he shared it with them, okay, and they loved it. So the next year, she made another red velvet cake, and this went on for, I'm not sure how many years, several years. So when Bob got ready to retire, they had a little party for him, and one of his coworkers came up and said, well, what about the cake? And he said, what do you mean? And he said, well, now that you're retiring, you know, what about that cake we get every year? So even though he's been retired, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, Kathy still makes that cake. Wow. And takes it to his coworkers at Cooper Tire.
On Valentine's Day?
On or around Valentine's, okay, wow, Day, but in February, yeah, at some point in February, she takes it to him.
I see. Is that recipe in today's paper?
Yes, the recipe and the icing.
What do you know? What makes it so special? From,
well,
looking at the recipe,
have you ever had red velvet cake?
Mm-hmm. Is,
well,
it's the moistness of it, that
and the icing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the cake has that chocolate flavor from the cocoa,
mm-hmm,
and then the icing, you know, cream cheese and powdered sugar, and I mean, you know, what's not to like?
Yeah, sure, sure. So, I didn't know if there was something she did that made.
Well, she makes
it
with
a little
love.
Bit differently. Of course, that always helps.
Always,
yeah. And of course, she had an interesting story, you know, as far as learning to cook, and it sounds like her mom didn't enjoy it, so, you know, maybe she wasn't necessarily doing it a lot as a girl, or spending time in the kitchen with her mom.
Her
doing
mom
it.
Was a basketball coach, so that was her life and her love. So Kathy learned to cook from her home ec teacher,
yeah,
but before she got proficient, she made some cookies that were so hard that when her grandmother tried to eat one, she broke a tooth. And her brothers never let her live.
I'm sure they did. Because if my sister did that, I wouldn't have let her live it down.
But she's gotten much, much better. And in fact, she hosts her family and friends for holiday dinners every year now. She's got Thanksgiving coming up, and she's already got her menu ready. And then she'll have them back at Christmas again.
And I see you say her Mexican cornbread is something else she's known for. Is that also in today's paper?
It is. Okay. It is. It's as she said, they don't count calories at her house because it's got cheese and it's got sour cream and creamed corn and all kind of yummy stuff in it.
Sounds good. So you can check out those recipes. Jenna, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
As we wrap up today, I didn't address something at the beginning of the show that I feel like I really need to get off my chest today. And we just need to Take a moment for the San Francisco Giants.
Yes, we do. Boy, was that an epic meltdown.
Sorry, Chris Kiefer. We think highly of you, but you lost.
The largest comeback in postseason history in the ninth inning.
Cubs win.
Oh, Harry Carey is smiling down. Chris Kiefer is frowning.
That was tough. That was tough. I'm not going to lie. Tough night. I mean, you know, it's kind of conflicting emotions because the Cubs are such a great story. And, you know, I mean, the Giants have had their success. I don't want to be selfish about it. And, you know, friends are Cubs fans. And so, I kind of didn't want to stand in the way of that. But it was tough. You know, it's tough to see a season end any time because you kind of invest so much of yourself in it. But, especially to end that way.
Well, look at it this way. You can go to sleep before 10 o'clock now.
Yeah, that's key. Not last night. Last night, obviously, it took me a while to unwind. Yeah.
The night before. You stayed up till almost 2.
Justin Whitmore, who's also a big Cubs fan, and I were still texting back and forth at about 2 in the morning about the game. But,
that was a late one. Last night was 11, was it?
It was about 11:15. It was after midnight before I could finally let go of the game. But that's kind of how this season had to end for the Giants because that's kind of how the whole season went. Was
why didn't they just leave Matt Moore in for the ninth? He was untouchable practically.
Yeah, he was.
I mean,
they'll
ask that question all offseason.
They will. I mean, he threw 120 pitches, which you know is a lot. You know, they just haven't had a ninth inning guy, you know, all year, and that's kind of been they've lost a lot of late leads. And,
well,
you know, when the ninth inning started, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling about all this. You got me on the wrong subject, but I had a bad feeling when the ninth inning started. So I wouldn't say I was shocked by it. But it was tough.
Well, our condolences, Chris.
Thank you.
All right. Well,
all the best to the Cubs.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. You can find us many places in iTunes, any of your podcast apps like Stitcher, Player.fm, Satchel, whatever. Of course, you can stream us at memo.djournal.com. We're on Twitter at djournalmemo. Find us there for when new episodes drop. I'm on Twitter at Brad Locke. Derek, you're on Twitter at W. Derek Russell.
That's it.
Chris is on Twitter at Chris Kiefer.
At Crying Giants Fan.
Changed it.
Oh, look, there's a tear when he said that. Kind of looked like the Native American in the pollution commercial.
Single tear. Yeah. All right. So
there's
that's
always
it.
Next season.
Always.
Wait till next year, which is what the Cubs used to say.
Yeah.
And now maybe
for
this
like
is
30 seasons.
More than that, for like 100-something seasons. But
we got close last time. I remember around Back to the Future Day. It was last year.
So I keep forgetting you're a Cubs fan, aren't you?
Yeah.
I just don't talk about it much.
Yeah. I do love me some Harry Carey, but I also love me some Will Ferrell as Harry Carey. Some people find sacrilege. Did you see Bill Murray wearing the Ain't Afraid of No Goat shirt at game one?
Nice. Yeah. If they win the series, I hope Will Ferrell comes on SNL to do a Harry Carey sketch. He has to.
It would be good.
At least on Weekend Update.
I do remember about 3 weeks after Harry Carey died, he came on and they were like, "Didn't you die?" "Yeah. What's your point?" It's good stuff. But there's always next season. He'll be okay. He'll be okay. We'll.
All right. Well, good show, fellas. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope everybody has a great Wednesday.